Greetings. Happy Monday. Welcome to the Steve Dace Show here live and on demand on Blaze TV, radio, and podcast. I am Steve Dace alongside Todd Erzin. Gloriously not, finally, alongside Aaron McIntyre. Him and Bella had their baby girl, Abigail, over the weekend. So everybody is doing great. So Aaron's paternity leave begins now. He's off for the next 2 weeks. Victoria, our former intern, is here. There she is. And I came in expecting to give like a pep talk or anything, you know, but it was very clear.
Ice in her veins.
Yep.
Just a gamer.
Absolutely. I mean, she is fired up, ready to go. I hope she's not, this doesn't make her nervous. This is the first time I have done a show produced by somebody not named Aaron McIntyre since 2015. And I'm guessing Victoria was in elementary school then.
Probably.
That was like 10 years ago.
Probably, yeah.
Or at the very least, like entering middle school, maybe. So it's been a minute. But trust that Aaron did a fantastic job training her. And looks like she's ready to go. You're right. Looks like she's ready to have some fun. Now, we will do a bit of a stripped-down version of the show. We won't have the opening montage for the next 2 weeks, mainly because that's kind of Aaron's main contribution. That's kind of his proprietary thing. And if you guys know the history of the show, it just kind of started happening organically. And I was like, you know, this is so good. We should like lead off the show with this and have it kind of set the tempo. And it's not often that a guy lets someone else open his show that has his name on it. But all I really cared about is how good it was. And it set the table. Plus, you know, took some of the work off of me to not have to come up with the agenda mm-hmm. every single day at the exact same time. So we'll do show. We'll do this today and for the next 2 weeks the way we used to do it, where I'll have a couple of things in the opening monologue here in just a few minutes that I think kind of set the table at a meta level of some of the stuff we're either going to talk about today or we typically talk about. And then as the show goes on, we'll get into more specifics where those things are concerned. But congratulations to the entire McIntyre clan. We are very excited for them and for baby number two. And now Ben has a little sister that he'll have to learn to protect and take care of. So looking forward to that. Also want to let you know that our show every day brought to you by our friends over at First Cup Coffee Company. It is the Patriot-owned coffee company with a flavor for every freedom-loving American, and they share your values on top of making great coffee. If you want to give them a shot, get 10% off with my promo code DACE when you go to firstcup.com and use that promo code DACE, you'll get 10% off. And then if you end up subscribing, you'll get an additional 10% off for the life of the subscription. It is shipped within days of being roasted. They put the roast date right there on every bag. And if Aaron were here, he'd tell you how great this coffee is because he loves it. All right. Firstcup.com, promo code DACE. That's firstcup.com, promo code DACE. And I also want to remind you that the outstanding network special that we put together at Blaze TV is still there. I mean, this is something that every single American needs to see. And if I can't believe when you look at the combined talent at this network, we haven't justified for you, what is it, $10 a month or something, I think is what a subscription to Blaze TV is. But if that would be the case, then this piece of content certainly does it. Bought and paid for. How politicians get filthy rich. Every single living American needs to see this. All right, you get $30 off your Blaze TV subscription so you can watch it with Dace Originals as your code. DaceOriginals.com is where you want to go. DaceOriginals.com. I think it could very well be the finest piece of content ever produced at this network by any of us in over about the 5.5 years that we've been associated now with the Blaze. DaceOriginals.com is where you want to go. $30 off when you use the code DaceOriginals at DaceOriginals.com. All right. Coming up on today's program, at the bottom of the hour, it appears we have reached the juncture I long feared we would get to in the life debate. And if you recall, this probably was something we were talking a lot about in 2015, 2016, that there's a limited window, I thought, and this was right as the whole debate between, I guess we'll call it pro-life incrementalism, and it's been given several different terms over the years. Pro-life absolutism. When we attached legislative, system to it. We called it personhood based on the language in the Fifth Amendment, and the 14th Amendment echoes that language. No person shall be denied life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Now it's called abolition. All right, so it's gone through several different kinds of headlines or brandings, but it's basically the other view, which is that we should practice, we should try to drive abortion out of existence like abolition did the slavery movement, okay, back in the 19th century. And so I said at the time, about the time that Aaron was coming to work here for the first time, and you too, that we had, I thought we had a window right now to, because we hadn't spent much of the last generation of pro-life debate arguing when life begins and what is a life. And then right around that time is when we started kind of the compromise that was reached, maybe unofficially, but the incrementalist side started putting up heartbeat bills so there would at least be some argument now about what is actually life. And of course, wouldn't you know, that ends up leading to the overturning of Roe v. Wade, right? And I said at the time, you go back and listen to those shows, you may remember this, Todd, that I thought we had a window right now to actually corner the other side on, is this a life and when does life begin? That it wasn't just that I thought it was the morally righteous argument to make, but the strategic one to make, because we tried everything else. So why not try our actual premise, right? And make them actually say out loud, we know it's a life and we're fine killing it. But that I didn't think that window would be open forever. That when the conscience is seared, the heart is hardened, that eventually we go from it's a clump of cells to I don't know if it's a life to, yeah, I know it's a life, but I don't care. I don't want to have to take care of it. And my life is for me and nobody else. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It appears that we may have crossed that Rubicon over the weekend with a clip that has gone viral from Bill Maher. And we'll discuss that at the bottom of the hour. And then next hour, we're going to get in depth on what happened over the weekend with Israel and Iran. And there has been in the last, you know, it's funny, when I first broke into this business, hyper-dispensationalism was, and its view of Israel, and we'll get into some of that next hour, was kind of the dominant theme when I first got into this business. I mean, you literally had people within the Bush White House, like literally quoting, or even pastors literally quoting scripture verses on the rationale for their Israel policy. And that was just kind of the accepted nomenclature on the right. And, you know, the way I'm wired to be a contrarian, and I'm a brand new baby Christian. I don't know a lot about this stuff, you know, and over the few years, you know, I'm getting discipled, and I do a lot of research on what the Christian church has historically thought of Israel in a post-New Testament church world. And I discovered that this viewpoint is actually relatively new. Like the Catholic Church never had this viewpoint. And many of the reformers, actually, on the Protestant side, didn't have this viewpoint either. And so this is a... And that the relationship between Christians and Jews is a little bit more complicated than the current dispensational norm, where a lot of your conservative Orthodox Jews, and we have a lot of friends like that, Josh Hammer, Daniel Horowitz, in many respects, they feel more friendly with Christians than they do their fellow Jews when it comes to defense of Israel, right?
Yeah.
They've even said that stuff on our show. I saw Tom Fitton at Judicial Watch say the other day, as a Jew, he feels more comfortable working with this Christian organization than he does many Jewish ones, okay? Well, what's happened now is this thing's kind of gone way to the other side. Where are we just asking questions, or are we rebranding anti-Semitism now and using that as the just asking questions is a trope. It's a camouflage of what our true goals are for why we're doing such a thing. And next hour, I want you and I, Todd, to test this. All right. Avi Meyer is the former editor at the Jerusalem Post. He put out a series of posts over the weekend in the aftermath of something like 300 missiles Iran launched at Israel. And kind of the official Zionist Jewish state. And I don't use those terms pejoratively. I mean, the Lord uses the term Zion or Zionist in the scriptures many times. So they don't necessarily have to be used as a pejorative, even though they often are by anti-Semites and Muslims, but I repeat myself. But he kind of gave, I think, you know, sort of the Netanyahu Zionist pro-Israel Jewish reaction to these talking points, right? I want you and I to go through these one by one next hour. And let's put our critical thinking caps on. Can we come up with legitimate critiques or criticisms to what Mr. Meyer eloquently writes? That even if we don't necessarily share them ourselves, but these are things that critically thinking people could come to these conclusions without their own version of theological projection. Like, are we were theologically projecting that, you know, American foreign policy has to line up with the dispensational view of Israel. And now we have a new group emerging on X and Twitter. I know a lot of you aren't on there, but a lot of the thought leaders are. And this new group is emerging saying, well, now actually we want our replacement or fulfillment or post-millennial Christian view of eschatology to now drive our policy to Israel, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's you know, go through the looking glass on that next hour and critically think through that. All right. Before we get to all of that, though, I want to share something that was posted. Speaking of Twitter and X, and again, most of you aren't on there. Over 80% of Americans do not have an active Twitter or X account. Okay, we're around 80%. So this is not something most of you see on a daily basis, but in our line of work, it is, as I've described it before, it is the city gate. It is where a lot of narratives get tested, hashed out, contested. Since Elon Musk took it over, it really is the last place left in America where any form of real debate is taking place. And I would kind of say, Todd, in the transition since Elon took over, it's gone. My own thoughts, looking at my own account every morning. And if you're in our line of work, you have to have an account. I mean, you have to. There's no other way that you would possibly be able to keep up with everything happening in the thought leader space without it. The hours it would take to acquire this all on your own. It's must see TV, basically. Yeah. Fair?
Yes.
And, you know, before Elon took it over, well, there was the pre-Trump era. It was a phenomenal place to argue, debate, and create and test narratives. What happened after Trump, because again, he used this to get around a lot of corporate media to get his narratives out, and he used it successfully to get elected, they began to clamp down on dissent little by little by little right after Trump took the oath of office. And then, of course, this culminated with just the flat out government sanctioned censorship. You think of Alex Berenson's lawsuit against Twitter, which, you know, the discovery process revealed they were literally taking orders from the Biden White House and the CDC, even still under Trump, of whom they were going to censor to make sure you weren't allowed to test any of their talking points. Right.
Yes.
And so, you know, the year plus before Elon bought it, it was just like there needs to be more dissent here. I mean, there's just way too much regime pruning of this app. Now I feel as if just idiots are, you know, what's the if you hate Iowa, one of the acronym for our states is idiots out walking around. All right. There's a lot of that now on X and Twitter. But you know what? I would rather have that than the latter, because much, much rather have that, because in the latter case, I get to decide, right? I can mute people. I can unfollow people. I can downvote them so that the algorithm doesn't put people that I deem in my own opinion as not being serious as much in my feed, as opposed to some, you know, oligarchy masquerading as a board of directors at Twitter doing this for me, taking literal orders from 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, the Democratic National Committee, right?
Yes.
All right. And one of the people on there that I follow, and I know this is a name a lot of you know, I think she used to be on 60 Minutes back in the day. Wasn't Cheryl Atkinson on 60 Minutes? I know she was a very high-ranking, award-winning reporter.
Yes.
I think she's with Sinclair now. But I believe back in the day when we actually still feigned corporate America, or corporate news still pretended to do news, I think she was one of the journalists on 60 Minutes. Okay. And over the weekend, I saw this X post / tweet from Cheryl. She writes, "How can it be that nobody has done an after action report on our botched COVID response that explains, with the benefit of hindsight, what we should do differently next time? And there will be a next time. As it stands, I conclude we'll make all the same mistakes Nobody's been held accountable. Nobody has admitted their mistakes. The CDC concluded it just needs more money, which it got, and power. What's wrong with this picture? Her diagnosis is 100% correct. But it's of this, but I say this respectfully as someone who respects her work. And for example, she did a feature on my buddy Bill Salier, who used to guard President Bush at Camp David, the decorated Marine who they tried to kill by not letting him have ivermectin during COVID, remember? All right. So she was kind enough to do a feature on him. Very thankful for that. So I say this with the utmost respect. But Cheryl's lament there is over the symptoms, not the actual disease. Okay. And I'll tell you what I think the actual disease is here in a minute. First, a word about our friends over at Preborn. Abortion has been the greatest sin in our nation's history. It still happens every single day. A lot of times it's happening chemically now. Unfortunately, overturning Roe was only the first in a list of steps we need to take to end this scourge once and for all. And that's where the ministry of Preborn comes in. They empower young expectant mothers in crisis who are considering murdering their children to choose life and to not do so. Preborn has rescued hundreds of thousands of babies this way with grace and truth, the biblical method of persuasion and evangelism. They confront mothers with the truth of an ultrasound and that is an actual live being they're carrying. And then they offer them the grace that the support they need when they choose life, both the prenatal care and assistance and support. And they do it postnatal as well. All of this, by the way, both the grace and the truth, all of it free of charge, provided that they've got tax deductible funding from people like us. And if you want to make a donation today, you guys have been so generous. You've helped with Preborn tens of thousands of babies. I want to say the number was over 50,000 babies we've helped them save since this partnership began. Let's keep it going. Just to dial #250 and use the keyword baby on your mobile phone, #250 keyword baby. Or if this is simpler, preborn.com/Steve. Just go there and donate now. Preborn.com/Steve. That's preborn.com/Steve. All right. So back to Cheryl Atkinson's tweet pointing out, why has there been no inquiry? None. Where is the justice? Who's being held accountable? I can answer that question. We're incapable of it. And I will explain why. We no longer have any form of requirement, let alone desire for objective truth in the Western Hemisphere anymore. It's gone. And when you lose that, what that also means is doing things because they're the right thing, regardless of the consequences. By the way, there's never been a period of time in human history where that's been easy. Never. Never been a period of time where that's been easy. So really, we're just talking about periods of time where it's just harder than others. Okay? This is, for the Western Hemisphere, this period of time, it's the hardest it's ever been to be altruistic, or in other words, just to do the right thing just because it is the right thing. And for wanting nothing in return, and for no other reason than just that, okay? And when that takes root in a culture, another way of saying this is, in the unseen realm, or theologically, means we turned our backs on God. Because it would typically be some form of a fear of God or a desire for the justice and the providence of God to act that would lead us to act altruistically. You know, the idea that the universe just, you know, bends to justice and righteousness on its own organically through natural processes, that's not true, is it? No. So that would require then a judge, or what the founders called in the Declaration of Independence, the supreme judge of the universe. Okay. And so along those lines, a lot of times we are prompted to act altruistically under the belief that a higher authority, even if down here on this mortal coil, we won't get applauded or a parade for doing so, that a higher authority either in this life or the next will render the verdict and say, well done, good and faithful servant. Mm-hmm. Right? We have lost that in the Western Hemisphere. And when that is lost in any hemisphere, in any period of time, and in any culture, what you end up with now is truth is sought if and only it creates, or so, truth is either sought or proclaimed only in that justice is the same, typically only if it advances a narrative or an outcome for somebody. So today, the former president's trial begins, one of them in New York, right? How many politicians do you think have probably paid hush money to people that they had sex outside of wedlock with?
A few.
How many Democratic politicians? I'm just guessing, given his history, this probably isn't maybe the first time that Donald Trump has done this.
Fair.
Okay. But the previous times, did he do so while being the Republican nominee for president, maybe?
No.
So now suddenly the great people of Manhattan, which is well known for its law and order. I think if there's anything about New York City, we know it's a place of law and order. They now suddenly care greatly.
Also,
right?
Very chaste in New York. Yes.
Exactly. Similar to the, do you think Donald Trump just started inflating his real estate value to lessen his tax burden when he came down the escalator in the spring of 2015 to announce that he was a Republican candidate for president?
I do not.
Probably not. And do you think that there's all kinds of socialites and rich people that are doing the same thing as we speak in New York City and Manhattan right now?
Another day that ends in Y.
Correct. But were they doing it as the Republican nominee or the would-be Republican nominee for president? You see where I'm going with this? All right. We pursue things because they will give us the outcome that perpetuates the narrative that we want. Not because they're actually objectively true and good.
So it's all propaganda.
Yes. And since both sides now, including the former president, are guilty of some of what was done to us during COVID, and this is indisputable, there is literally no incentive for the two sides that control, that would give us the two sides through which we would get access in a small R Republican form of government. The people that we would elect as our proxies, all right, that would then reflect us back to ourselves, they have no incentive at all to push for that outcome, because no one's, it's the same thing with the Epstein files. No one comes out of this with a clear W. Everybody's got embarrassing names on their own jersey on the Epstein flight logs, right? Everybody does. And we've all got prominent people that have their hands on the murder weapon of COVID-19 and Operation Warp Speed. No one can get a political advantage out of this. Therefore, there's just no truth or justice to be sought. And I think it's very important to understand this, to understand the times in which we live. And I think that this is going to be a real challenge for believers, because we're not allowed to do that. That doesn't mean we can't make any accommodations, and we have to. We live in a fallen world, right? I mean, my great resistance to the phrase lesser of two evils throughout my entire career is that it's a fallacy. Virtually everything on earth is a lesser of two evils, because no one is good but whom?
God.
So therefore, there's only how many gods are there?
One.
So if no one is good, no one is good but God, and there's only one of those, that means everybody else is what?
Less than good.
Yeah. So that means literally every decision we make, everyone, what show am I going to watch? What person am I going to marry? What college should I go to? What job should I take? What city should I move to? Literally everything we're going to do is the lesser of two evils.
We're east of Eden.
Correct. So if everything is the lesser of two evils, that also means what? Nothing is. That's not a standard. Okay? And so when we hold that as the plumb line as opposed to God, the goal is this is God's standard. We know going in, we're not going to meet this standard perfectly. All right? But the goal is by efforting to, we raise ourselves in that process beyond what we would normally be capable of in our natural craven state, right?
Yes.
But if we get rid of this up here, then everything is a comparison. I mean, I see, you know, and my struggle sometimes with you and our audience and this show is, and this is on me. It's not that I don't want to make the moral calculations in some places that many of you do. I make moral calculations in my own places that are bad. That's why I'm a sinner in need of saving. We all make moral calculations that do not line up with God's math in some avenue of our lives, correct?
Yes.
It's just that I don't think I'm allowed to. I don't think that's a... I think the God who... How did I get this gig? Did I work my way up? I wish I could tell you I did. I mean, I kind of did. But all through literal opportunities that God orchestrated. People I previously didn't know. Every job I've ever had in this business, someone I previously didn't know called me and offered it to me. Going back to my first gig ever working in sports talk radio. So that's a nice reminder to me that ultimately, I'm not accountable to you in the audience. I'm accountable to him. That doesn't mean I don't want your approval. But that can't be the driving force of what I'm going for, because are you good? No. Am I good? No. And so when two sides decide they're going to hold each other to the standard of what is good, and neither one is basically good, are we going to push to good? No, we're not. We're going to create a feedback loop at best. Hey, you overlook my blind spots, and I'll overlook yours, basically. And that's kind of where we are now. One of the things I saw over the weekend. And so you may think, well, Steve, you're very schizophrenic. You were just hammering Trump on the life issue a few days ago. And now you're out there saying the Trump administration, and we'll get more into this in the next hour, the Trump administration deserves great credit for Jordan, Saudi Arabia, taking action, not just releasing statements. They took offensive action in support of Israel against Iran. So which is it, Steve? There is no which is it. They're both true. You ever read through the story of David? Let me broaden it even more. Everyone in the Bible. Everyone except Jesus in the Bible. You ever read through their entire stories? I mean, over here, Todd thinks Peter is the first bishop of the church. Jesus once looked at him and said, hey, dude, get thee behind me, Satan. I mean, that was like the harshest rebuke he gave any of his apostles. He gave to St. Peter. I mean, David's doing great. Decides one day, you know, Lord told me never take a census, not take pride in my own troops and what I've accomplished. He decides, you know, I'm going to take pride, I'm going to take a census. And you're like reading this and you're like, why? Why did you do this? This is the human story. We all are like, why? So is it true that Trump's abortion standard is morally abhorrent? Yes. And it's not the same standard that Republicans before him have taken. That's not true. I wish people, and including people I like and respect, would stop saying that. Trump is not just going with the rape and incest exceptions or letting states decide. He is actively urging Arizona and Florida as states to not protect life, to decide differently. That's something we've never seen before. It's not something we've ever seen. On the other hand, are we closer to World War III right now with him not in office compared to the people that are?
Yes.
Yes. I think that's true, too. And so that's going to kill a lot of innocent people, too, if it happened, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So this is the human condition. So I'm not schizophrenic. We are. We are all schizophrenic. I get emails all the time from young men. You guys are really encouraging me. You know, you've really encouraged me, Steve. You're setting a good example for men like me. 4 years ago at this time, I was contemplating walking out on my marriage. Therefore, by the grace of God, go each and every one of us. This is why we can't lose this plumb line up here. Because if we do, what happens is guys like me are more inclined to go ahead and walk out and say, yeah, but, you know, I'm not as bad as that guy that did it twice. You know what I'm saying? I mean, okay. Because we start measuring each other by each other. That is the land of the book of the Judges stuff. That's a drain circling. We cannot measure each other by each other. Ultimately, we have to practically, because we are in relationship to one another in this world, okay? But if we stop there and just say, okay, that's the best I can do right now, and then we go to, but therefore that's why it's great. No. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That just the best you can do right now doesn't mean it's objectively good. And if you decide to abandon the objective good, I promise you, the best you can do right now is going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. Because there's nothing up here holding the standard up and saying, let's aim for that. No, we brought everything down here. We've rebuilt the Tower of Babel. We will bring God down to our level, or we'll come up to his. More in a moment. All right, back here on the Steve Dace Show, brought to you by our friends over at Trust and Will. The things we build our future around are the things that are worth protecting. Making an estate plan now means gaining security of your assets and peace of mind for you and your loved ones. And with Trust and Will, you can create and manage a custom estate plan starting as low as $199. Just go to trustandwill.com/dace. That's trustandwill.com/dace and get 10% off plus free document shipping. 10% off and free document shipping. Over the last couple of years with some of the life changes we've undergone, kids moving out, everything else, Amy decided, you know, it's been many years. We need to update our stuff. We did all of that through Trust and Will. And I said, hey, I want you to give me an honest review of what that process was like as you went through it. She came back and gave it an absolutely rave review. All right. So simple to use website that has a very straightforward process to it. If you're comfortable, share any particular parts of your plan that are the most important to you with Trust and Will. And they'll make you comfortable because they'll get you to the finish line that you want to get to with an overall rating of excellent and thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, used by hundreds of thousands of families and counting, including my own. Secure your assets and protect your loved ones with Trust and Will. Just get 10% off and free shipping if you go to Trust and Will, A-N-D, by the way, trustandwill.com/dace. That's 10% off and free shipping if you go to trustandwill.com/dace. All right, let's bring in our good friend Bob Vanderplaats from the Family Leader. Good to see you, brother. How you been?
I've been doing really well. Good to be here.
So the life debate has been raging anew since last Monday morning. We talked to you about that at the time. And I still have no idea who in the Trump campaign thought, let's just randomly come out and spark insurgency within our own base on the issue that has produced the most loyal voting bloc this political party's had in the last 50 years. Like it boggles the mind. I mean, I can see if it was front and center in the news or there was some back and forth in a debate between the two candidates, but just randomly, like, you know, the economy's falling apart and Biden keeps doing something he has no power to do, forgiving student loans. Let me just stop talking about that, and instead, let me just turn the guns on my own base and talk about... That's literally what occurred a week ago, right? Okay?
Yeah, I laugh.
Am I even mildly exaggerating this?
Well, I laugh because, frankly, it doesn't boggle my mind. I mean, these are political consultants saying these are all the areas where we can beat Biden on, whether it's Israel, foreign policy, the economy, the border, whatever it might be. But this is the issue that we believe we can get beat on. So therefore, let's go
That's
out.
That's a very Republican Party thing.
So let's run out. Let's defy our platform. Let's defy our base. Let's tell them where we're at on the abortion issue, and let's get it out of the way. And that way, we won't have to talk about it the rest of the campaign.
Right, because that never
and
works.
What has happened, if this thing has been hyper-injected into the debate, and it's going nowhere soon.
It's a very Republican Party thing to talk about your weaknesses. Yeah, you don't see the Democrats going out there and you know, guys, maybe we're undermining too much of the Constitution. Maybe we promoted too many groomers. They only discuss everything from a position of strength. The Republican Party is like that dude still doing the comb over. Dude, just take the razor and own it. Okay, you know what I'm saying? I mean, the Republican, it's a very Republican Party thing to instantly start talking. In other words, what you just said is what I said. Stop talking about all the issues you can win on and start talking about the one that they think they can win on.
The one that you think will blow up your own base and excite their base. Let's talk about that issue.
Correct.
But probably not the issue you want to talk about.
One of the things that it did do this week, though, unintentionally, is I think it provided a very revealing moment. And it came on a show that a lot of revealing moments have had, have occurred in the last few years. And it's because the guy hosting the show, for lack of a better analogy, is kind of the spirit of the age version of me, for lack of a better description. Like, he's a sincere, real believer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he actually believes in their talking points and gets offended when he finds out after the fact they really don't believe these talking points. These are all just lies to acquire power.
So you
control.
Call the right's bluff.
Yeah.
He calls the left's bluff.
Correct. Yeah. And in the middle of that, they had a conversation on Bill Maher's program over the weekend on this issue and this debate. And in the middle of that conversation, Bill Maher said the following.
Not if you believe it's murder. You know, that's why I don't understand the 15-week thing. Or the Trump's plan is, let's leave it to the states. You mean, so killing babies is okay in some states? Like, I can respect the absolutist position. I really can. I scold the left on when they say, oh, you know what? They just hate women, people who aren't pro-life, pro-choice. They don't hate women. They just made that up. They think it's murder. And it kind of is. I'm just okay with that. I am. I mean, there's 8 billion people in the world. I'm sorry, we won't miss you. That's my position on that. What?
That's quite harsh, Bill.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that not your position if you're pro-choice?
Is that not your position if you're pro-choice? Now, that's the Maquis de Sade. That is the Aleister Crowley, okay, position, okay? Do what thou wilt. That is the whole of the law, okay? But that is, again, he's the true believer.
He owns it.
Yes.
He says, I'm okay with it.
See, he's doing the inverse of how I started my career. I started my career bringing on all these Christian leaders after that very first caucus cycle you and I went through together with Huckabee.
Like, yeah, 2008.
Where were all these Christian leaders and why are they with Romney, who funded abortion and Romney Care, right? And I started asking them questions like the guy at Focus on the Family and the guy at the Southern Baptist Convention. These weren't minor figures. These were some of the biggest names in the Christian conservative movement.
And the marriage debate was big in that time, and Romney was wrong on the marriage debate.
And I would ask him questions like, how many babies can a Republican kill and still be pro-life? Why is it okay? Why is it okay if a baby is conceived? I'm new to this. I don't understand. Like, I'm a baby Christian. This is my first election cycle hosting a show as a believer. And I guess I really believed our own BS. I really believed our own talking points and thought the rest of us did, too.
And you believed the Republican Party platform.
Correct. Which codified in the platform the premise of every question I'm asking. That is what Bill Maher's doing there. And you can tell he's like, Why is it harsh? Isn't that what you believe? I mean, and they don't want to have to admit this. They don't.
Oh, his audience was stunned. Mm-hmm. And not only was his audience stunned, that's why you heard no visual or verbal anything or audible anything. And then you take a look at the guests on his shows.
Pierce Morgan, of all people, saying that's too harsh.
Pierce Morgan. When he's saying it, you can tell he's stunned.
Yeah.
By what Bill Maher just said.
Can't say the quiet part aloud, Bill. We just keep that amongst ourselves.
Yeah. That's not what we're talking about here. But what I loved about Bill Maher, and that's why I tweeted, although I disagree with his conclusion, I found it refreshing. Refreshing they just called it for what it is. And basically what he did there, Steve, is he called out the left and saying, listen, stop this women rights stuff. Mm-hmm. That's not it. You want to kill a baby. And so they're right. And they're against killing a baby, and you're for killing a baby. But then he called out the right, too. He goes, so what I don't get is all this negotiation stuff on the life issue. If this is still about killing a baby, up to 15 weeks it's okay. In different states it's okay. I mean, basically he's making our argument for us, Steve, mm-hmm. of saying, listen, if slavery is wrong, it's wrong in Iowa and Missouri. If abortion is wrong, it's wrong in every state, not in some states. So therefore, to say this is a state, this is not a state issue. This is a life and death issue. It's a moral issue. And so what I loved about it is that he's calling both sides out at the same time. And you saw the stunned reaction on the left.
Mm-hmm.
But trust me, if the right was on the couch on the other side, you would have saw the same stunned reaction.
Yep.
Because he just called it out.
Todd, your thoughts?
I think that's the most important point right there. I mean, of course, we all like it when the left is shown its reflection, its true reflection, and how they handle with that. But that's, at the end of the day, that our job, first and foremost, isn't to conquer that. It's to conquer our own demons. It's to mm-hmm. conquer our own heart. And you aptly put it right there. We talk about this all the time on the show. You can't tell anymore the average Christian's life. in most respects.
Oh, sure.
Like in the earlier church, look how, Josephus, look how they love one another. That's not reflected in the average goings-on of the church. We're constantly pulling our punches. We're constantly making the world flat for some level of comfort. And we know, think of the Christian in your life that would have been sitting there next to, and it would have been the same nervousness. I'm sure some of them were in that audience. Have you ever heard an audience like that in your life? No one knew what to do. And I bet there's some people who would claim they have some kind of relationship with Jesus. And the same is the exact same thing about what you said is true. They just would be stuck knowing full well they have no place to go because he nailed them.
Yeah. And the reason that the audience did what they did is that we have nuanced this debate into so many talking points.
Yes, we have. Did God really say this thing? We have done this to the last syllable. Yeah,
and so therefore we really even forgot about what this is all about until he calls it out. And when he calls it out, all of a sudden there's this stunned silence. I think left and on the right. And Todd, I think the reason the church and the blue, why you can't tell the difference, is because part of it is, well, wait a minute, my team believes in this. You mean this is our secular political team believes in this, so therefore I've got to kind of believe in this then too, but I hate being called out like that, saying what it is. Because, a real believer would be like, yeah, that's what it is. That's the why we do what we do. That's why we argue that this isn't a state rights issue. This is a human's rights issue. This is God creates life that we don't get to create life. It's from conception and natural death. We don't get to determine the time it dies. I mean, we're better than this. Right now, Iran's in the news for attacking Israel, right? Well, that's a culture of death. Why not? Why wouldn't you want to celebrate being a culture of life today?
I don't think we're better than this. I don't. I mean, I will just tell you, my inbox over the last several days has been full of people who don't want us to be better than this. Who are coming at me. I have to, literally, I have to change my position. The Bible's wrong. My inbox has been full of this for the last few days.
Exactly.
Okay, because of what you just said. Well, this is the position that Trump articulated, so I have to conform to him. Yeah. This goes to the conversation that we opened the show with, okay? Cheryl Atkinson asking, how is it that we have no COVID reckoning? And I pointed out before you came on, just to reiterate, the reason why is because we're not capable of one. When a culture turns its back on God, it loses virtually all of its instincts to pursue any form of altruism or ultimate truth, because if there's no God, then the idea that I can be rewarded for acting outside of what will get me cultural affirmation and accommodation is disincentivized.
Oh, sure.
There's no ultimate judge. And so therefore, my fellow man is the judge. Yeah. And when that happens, then every narrative is only pursued on the basis of whether it will advance the outcome one side or the other wants. Yeah. Okay. What Bill Maher just said there won't advance the outcome either side wants. The reason why they think they have to say we hate women is because they know that, or they at least they suspect, if they went out there and said, well, we really believe
we want to kill babies.
That's the Margaret Sanger position. Human weeds. We want to pull some weeds. You won't be missed. We wouldn't have had abortion in this country for 50 years. And the right truly does not believe it can win on wanting to actually uphold its own premise and principle. Since we've lost God and turned our back on him, we're now only accountable to one another. All right. And so both sides now are seeking a narrative that they think gets them to the outcome they want, not what's objectively good or true. That's what's happened with COVID. Both sides have their hand on the murder weapon. Both sides were involved in locking us down, masking us up, jabbing us up, poisoning us up. And so there's no reason for anyone to pursue this or the Epstein flight logs or anything else, because there's so many of everybody's team on every one of those lists that I can't win if this truth comes out. And so I'm not going to be the one pursuing justice or truth in this area. This is where we are as a culture. And even within this audience, and I push this audience and lean on this audience as much, if not more, than any other show on a platform this large in the United States of America, particularly from a biblical worldview, even in spite of that, and probably knowing how I will react to your attempts to do this and that they wouldn't hold up to 5 seconds of my scrutiny, I still have received tons of these notes the last few days, because in those days we had no king. So everyone did what was wise in their own eyes.
The end of the book of Judges.
Yeah.
So when you lose your moral absolutes, you lose your moral underpinnings, now it becomes to what can I sell?
Yep.
And what can I sell to the point so I can win? And that was the other question on one of my tweets. So let's say we forgive everything or forego everything. And you know what? When you win, what do you really win at the end of the day? And so to us, when you hear Bill Maher talk about this with the sanctity of human life, and even though he ends in the wrong position, I'm glad he clarified it about this is where we're at. This is where it is. And so does the church need to be involved? You bet I believe the church needs to be involved to reestablish the why, what you talked about. Understand why there's a difference in what we do, that you should look different to your neighbor, okay? The why. But on the other piece of it is, in a post-Roe world, it would sure be nice to have a champion for a culture of the sanctity of human life who can articulate the why that ends up to the what and why we're a better country than this. And what my fear is here is that we have just gone to the lower common denominator, although we're just a little bit better than the other side.
Yeah.
And that allows us to win. And again, I ask, so what are we winning?
That's a very good question. And I mean, and then you'll hear people say, well, until the church does this, well, again, who has a show this of this size or larger harder on the church collectively than I am? But I just want you all to know, when you get to heaven, you're not going to be able to say when it's your time to see if you can get in there or not. Well, you know, I was going to do that, but the church, nope. The idea that you individually get to punt on what you know is right and wrong because the institutions around you have failed, you're not accountable to institutions. We are accountable to God. Yeah. And that's the thing. And we have completely lost. I mean, I've literally got emails from people. Well, you know, if we elect this guy saying this stuff, we'll only kill this many hundreds of thousands of kids. I mean, like, they're, you know, like that's how this works. And that's not how it works. But again, because we are all pursuing an agenda of truth and justice if it gets us the outcome that we want, not if it's actually true or justice. I'll give you the last word.
I had the opportunity to speak at a pro-life banquet on Saturday night. And I talked about this. I said, you know, how we'd love to have a champion for the sanctity of human life right now, especially in a post-Roe world. And the politicians obviously are not going to do that. We saw that last week. The politicians are not going to be that champion,
no,
that clarion call for the sanctity of human life. So I said, if that's not going to happen, then you need to take up that mantle. You know, Todd Erzin does, Steve Dace does, Bob Aaronplatz does, your audience does. And I know that elections come down to choices, and I can even understand the rationale why you'd vote one way versus another way. I get that. But where is your voice on this
Amen.
Issue? Because when your voice is risen on this issue, the politics will change as well.
That's very
You're
well
the
said.
Church as well.
That's very well said. A great note to end on. We'll come back. Hour two is next. We are back here with Hour 2 here on Blaze TV Radio and Podcast. Steve Dace here with Todd Erzin. No Aaron McIntyre. His paternity leave has begun. Aaron and Bella welcomed beautiful little Abigail to the world over the weekend, so we'll see him in a couple of weeks. Victoria, our former intern, is here. She is crushing it so far. We haven't put too much pressure on her, though.
No.
I'm letting her think we're kind of girl dads and nice for a day or two. Then we'll see if we can crush her spirit maybe by Thursday. Thoughts?
Of course, by Friday, she's probably going to be asking us if it's smoked or something. You know, it all goes fast.
Todd walked out of here, or I'm sorry, Bob walked out of here and said to her, walking out of the break, you sure you're not too young to be producing this show? No, she is holding her own. She's doing a great job. So congratulations to the entire McIntyre clan, and we will see them again 2 weeks from today when Aaron returns. Until then, we are in very capable hands. You can also let us know what you think about what we think via the SteveDace.com inbox by emailing us, steve@stevedace.com. That's DEACE. Like us on Facebook, MeWe, and Gab. Follow me at Steve Dace Show on Twitter, Getter, Instagram, and TikTok. And then if you listen to the podcast, then you are a big part of our audience. Please, if you wouldn't mind doing this for us too, hit subscribe or follow if you're on iTunes. That way, every time we do a new episode, it shows up in your podcasting feed every single time. Or leave us a 5-star review if you like the show. And thanks to all of you that have done that for us as well. Thanks to our friends over at Jace Medical. My own affinity for Jace hit close to home for me here last week. You can probably hear a little, maybe a little nasally in the voice, fighting the annual, well, used to be annual until COVID and viral interference. I didn't have it that year. But my normally annual sinus infection started that up middle of last week. And I'm like, oh, man, I got to find the time to go to the doctor and everything else. And then I realized, no, I don't. I've got my Jace case. And I looked, you know, to make sure, because I first got this thing filled like in 2022. So I wanted to make sure the stuff wasn't expired. Actually, perfect timing, which reminds me, I got to get another Jace case from Jace Medical. But my doxycycline that was in there didn't expire till the end of April. So the sinus infection came at the perfect time. All right. So started the doxycycline right away, clearing that puppy up. Didn't have to waste time going to the doctor that I don't have and everything else. That's one of the reasons to get the Jace case at Jace Medical. The convenience factor, but the biggest reason is peace of mind. We're living through an era right now. We've got rations and drug shortages, and that's coming out of an era where they told us that drugs that had won Nobel Prizes, that had literally saved hundreds of thousands of lives all over the world for decades, were now suddenly dangerous and needed to be taken off the market. May or may not work against the pandemic, who knows, but they certainly weren't dangerous. Okay, so that's dishonest, you know, and that's why you want to make sure to get the Jace case, especially too, if you've got elderly parents, grandparents that you're looking after, taking care of. You want to make sure they're not completely beholden to the government for what they need. Get that peace of mind from our friends at Jace Medical. Get the Jace case. It can be expanded also beyond those venerable antibiotics like doxycycline. It can be expanded to what you need or your loved one needs. If you go to jacemedical.com, J-A-S-E for jacemedical.com, J-A-S-E for jacemedical.com, and use the promo code DACE at jacemedical.com. Promo code DACE will get you a discount at jacemedical.com. All right. This hour, Todd, I want you and I to help lead the audience through a critical thinking exercise, because this would normally be something I'm in favor of, by the way, even if I don't necessarily agree with the viewpoints that are being expressed, because I'm just a contrarian by nature. I'm just the guy that kind of thinks, you know, one of my favorite stories in all of the scriptures is with a minor prophet, not minor in the meta sense in that he wrote a small book of the Bible, but minor that he has a very small role in the Bible. I think his name is Micaiah. Or I think is his name. And this is how the infamous King Ahab is killed in the scriptures. The worst of Israel's kings, maybe, except for Manasseh, who sawed Isaiah in half, but that's another story. But the king of the south and the king of the north go to meet together, one of the rare times after the kingdoms were split that they joined together to fight a common enemy. And the king of the south, where they're still, you know, they're like Republicans, they're still pretending to be Jewish there. Okay, so they're still going to temple and stuff. They're still going through the rigmarole of it while doing what they want. The northern kingdom is basically Bill Maher at this point. Okay, yeah, we know that Jehovah told us not to worship at Bethel and Shiloh. We're just going to do it anyway. All right, the northern kingdom's just letting the freak flag fly. That's why Ahab's in charge. Okay, and the southern kingdom is still, they're like the Republicans. You know, they are pursuing degeneracy, 10-2 on the wheel at a safe, manageable speed. Okay, so the king of the south goes up to Ahab's court and they're getting ready to go to war against a common enemy among the Gentile pagans. And the king of the south is like, you know, we're missing something here. You know, back home in Jerusalem, we still at least pretend to listen to God's prophets. You know, we still at least have some around. Shouldn't we consult the word of the Lord to see if we're doing the right thing, you know? And Ahab's like, well, you know, maybe you guys, you don't know how we roll up here. I basically killed all those guys because, you know, I hated what they had to say. I kept getting rebuked. Okay, we kept having droughts and I'm trying to introduce a pagan religion here. We had this one prophet, Elijah, one time, and he went out there and just knifed all my guys. So we've been kind of doing the purge, kind of the public policy up here in the north. Have you seen this movie called The Purge? That's kind of what we're doing up here. And he's like, but, you know, just for funs and giggles, I kept one of them. All right, he's down in a cell, down in the basement. We bring him out every now and then at court, you know, just to kind of laugh at him. All right, but I brought him just as a reminder of how things used to be around here. For fun, I kept one. But I need to warn you, and this is literally what Ahab says right in the Bible. He says, he never tells me what I want to hear. Okay, so they go down and get the guy, drag him out of the basement, all right, bring him in to the court. And so they say, hey, we're consulting the word of the Lord, or the oracle here, the prophet, will the Lord bless us if we go to war? And this prophet says, I looked out and I saw a great victory for you, O king. And Ahab stops him right away. He's like, come on. I know that's BS. You never tell me what I want to hear. Tell me the truth. Right? And so Micaiah says, okay, here's the word of the Lord. I looked out and I saw the shepherd was struck down and the sheep scattered without the shepherd. What he's saying is, if you know how war was conducted in ancient times, similarly, you see this on a chessboard where the king is kept in the back row, right? And protected by who's in the front row? On the chessboard?
Pawns.
Yeah. All right. So the common folks go out and fight on the front lines while the king and the aristocracy stays. And they, you got them, guys. Okay. But back in ancient times, if the king was killed in battle, the armies would like scatter. They wouldn't know what to do because that was the chain of command. Right. Okay. And so what he is saying is you're going to go out there to war and you're going to get struck down and it's going to cause Israel's defeat, which is exactly what happened. Okay. And the idea of, he never tells me what I want to hear. See, I think we need to listen to the people that never tell us what we want to hear. Doesn't mean, did I say they were always right?
No.
Did I say we should always do what the people who never tell us what we want to hear tell us to do? Did I say that?
No.
No. But the one sure way to make sure that you are in a movement and not a cult is if you will at least grant an audience to the people within your own ranks who will not tell you what you want to hear. Fair?
Yes.
And because if you can't beat them, If what you're proposing cannot stand up to their objections, and even though they may not agree with you, they're at least favorable to you. Okay, if you can't overcome their objections, your chances are of overcoming the objections of those who are not favorable to you are much, much lower. Right?
Yes.
So movements need their contrarians. They need them, and I'm not just saying that in a self-serving way because I am a contrarian, but I kind of am. Okay, so movements need people like me, I hope. But in this case, I don't think I'm often seeing contrarianism, though, Todd. Because I struggle to see how you cannot understand the historical stakes here unless you don't want to. And maybe that's not fair. Okay? We have gone through a very large dumbing down of the country, right?
Yes.
So we've gone from you could never question Israel on the right to now the cool kids on the right are questioning Israel and doing so at times in ways that, you know, promote the Andrew Tates of the world, or they apparently we found the one Christian pastor left in Hezbollah and gave him a platform. You know, something. I kind of wonder if you're the last Christian pastor left that Hezbollah is allowing. You know what I'm trying to? Yeah, yeah. Okay. You know, what are you doing with your nights? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay. But and because a lot of it looks to me, and it's not because I don't think this because I haven't looked at their arguments. It's because I have that a lot of this looks to me like we're just attempting to repackage anti-Semitism. And I hate feeling that way because we're thinking like that because how many times have people like you and I been immediately dismissed? Well, you're just a racist. You're just a misogynist. Just, you hate women. Like we were just talking with the life issue, right? So I want to love my neighbor as I love myself. And I don't like it when people do that to me automatically as a means of dismissing my claims. So I want us this hour to look at the potential to be skeptical of the pro-Israel viewpoint or default setting. And to see if it's possible to own it without doing one of two things, okay, as ground rules. Number one, just being openly anti-Jew, anti-Semitic, okay? Number two, and this will be tougher for us, I think, without a theological framework. So I know a lot of you that are either new Christians or have never been Christians, you may not know this, but it's really only been a recent phenomenon in the history of the Christian church that there has been this like enamored view of Israel. This has only existed within the last couple hundred years. Prior to the advent of a theology known as dispensationalism, which basically there's a lot to this. Okay. I mean, whole books have been written on this. So I'm not going to stick the landing in the next minute and a half description. But in general, what it means is that God has divided history up into dispensations, okay, or periods
covenants.
Of times where things are revealed,
yes.
Okay, or are given prominence, okay. But it also believes that Jews and Gentiles are on separate prophetic tracks. Okay, it means that the church they don't believe that the church has fulfilled or replaced Israel post Messiah, but that the Jewish people have been set aside. Okay, for a period of time, we'll get into all this in the Roman study. Okay, the period of time of the Gentiles to make Jews jealous for their Messiah. Okay, and that after rapture, when the church is removed, then the Jewish people will again take center stage, where God will finish his prophetic mission with them. And again, there's a lot more to it than that, okay? But that'll give you enough to be dangerous and not be an idiot, okay? Fair, all right?
Yeah.
Catholicism has never taught this. I'm sure there are, because of the popularity of this view, there are Catholics who believe this. But institutionally, this is not a view that Catholicism, right, going back. And really, if you look at Catholic theology, a lot of it, as you know it today, kind of goes back to Augustine in that era, has never taught this,
right?
Okay. Neither, by the way, has Protestantism until the last couple of centuries. Like, none of the reformers would have believed this. Zwingli, Calvin, Luther, none of them would have. Okay. Knox, in fact, they all believed in what is often derided today as quote unquote replacement theology. Okay. But that's kind of a put down. Some of them believe that, but a lot of times they just believe when Jesus said it is finished, that period of the covenant was finished. The covenant that had been fulfilled. Okay. The reason God ultimately established a covenant with Israel was not to give them land or to make them his people, but was to create a line of messianic line. Okay. And the Messiah would come forth, the lamb slain before the foundations of the world. He would fulfill the wrath of God, the suffering servant. He was bruised for our transgressions, beaten for our iniquities. This would all occur, right? And then at the end, Jesus says, it is finished. And so what this viewpoint means is that is completed now. Okay. The mission, the nation of Israel fulfilled its mission. It has brought forth Messiah. Messiah ran the race. He finished the race. It is finished. And therefore, we're in a new covenant now with a new testament with the church. And the church now, we're not just working through one nation state, but we're trying to call all the nations now to the one true God. Fair description?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's what most of Christianity has believed until recently. So what you're seeing now is a resurgence of the group within evangelicalism who still believes that they're doing the opposite of what a lot of the ministers you're used to taking the very pro-Israel views are doing, which is they're also making the case we have to line up our foreign policy with our prophetic views of Israel. Both sides are making this case. It's just a matter of what their prophetic view of Israel is. Fair?
Yeah.
What I want us to do as much as possible, and it's going to be hard because we're here for theological reasons. Israel believes, going back to the advent of the scriptures, that it has a providential divine claim on this land. And Islam believes it does not. Okay? Do those things, are they rooted in philosophy, those differences? No.
No.
Are they rooted in some debate over geographic boundaries? No. In fact, Muhammad never even visited Israel. He went to Jerusalem once in a dream. That's the entire Islamist claim on the Holy Land. So that's all theological, right? This is all rooted in theology. The difference in theology between these two camps is did the covenant come through a son named Isaac, or did God's covenant come through a son named
Ishmael?
Ishmael, thank you. So one of those two. So it's going to be hard, but as much as possible, let's divorce the theology from this, and let's not immediately assume you have to be an anti-Semite to have a differing view on this. And then we'll see what conclusions we come to.
Yeah.
You okay with this so far?
Yeah, and at least in my end, the most argumentative people coming at me are the ones who are saying, if you think there's a historical good guy or bad guy in this, you're a globalist cuck who wants to send my kids to war. So I think I can stay on target with this because that's what I'm hearing.
Okay. With that said, let's do this. Let me tell you for a minute about our friends. It's a great segue to talk about my favorite underwear. Okay.
Why not?
There was really nowhere to slip that in, so to speak. So let's just do it right now. But Tommy John is absolutely fantastic. As I've said every time we've talked about them, the best compliment I can give to any of our partners is after they let me try and sample what they want me to promote to you for free, and if it passes muster with me, not only will I then try to convince you to partake as well, but will I go back out of my own pocket and do the same. And that is the case with Tommy John. It's the best underwear I've ever owned. That's why they've got over 20 million pairs sold, thousands of five-star reviews. Guys everywhere that try them love their Tommy Johns. I promise you, you won't regret it, okay? So if you want to give it a shot, you can shop their huge anniversary sale right now by saving 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Steve. This is just for a limited time. You can't beat this deal. 25% off site-wide at TommyJohn.com/Steve. And yes, they've got stuff for the ladies too. TommyJohn.com/Steve. Again, head over to TommyJohn.com/Steve. All right, so over the weekend, Iran launched approximately, varying accounts, we look at roughly, conservatively, over 300 various forms of missiles and drones at the nation of Israel, okay? And two things stand out about this in the aftermath. One, we had two nations that would have declared and did declare war on Israel at the very advent of its charter as a country in 1948, Saudi Arabia and Jordan, actually take active action in defense of Israel. It is thought that the Queen of Jordan has shot down, she's a pilot, by the way, that she may have shot down dozens of Iranian drones herself. Jordan already said it would give Israel access to its airspace to strike Iran back. This is unprecedented stuff. Well, Steve, these are Arab countries and they've long disdained Iran. That's very true. But we've long been not willing to acknowledge this. It really wasn't until the Trump administration came along and said, let's actually follow what people are really believe and let's see what can happen. And we saw historic amounts of peace initiatives in the Middle East during that time. And you saw even now, 3 years after Trump's departure from office, the statecraft that his administration performed during that era held up at this very moment. We've also got reports out from everywhere, from Reuters to the New York Times, that the Biden administration actually gave Iran parameters for what its strike against Israel could be, which just blows the mind. Now, let's contrarian that for a second. What are the chances they did that because they're being cunning and saying, hey, these kooks are going to hit Israel anyway. So let's give them some parameters of where it's the mission's likely to fail rather than escalate into a broader, based on what we see from this administration on a daily basis, you think they're capable of that level of realpolitik?
No.
Neither do I. I mean, I that would take far more faith than the belief that Jesus was dead and walked out of a tomb. I just, based on the evidence we see from these people, I don't believe if they were that level of cunning, mortgage payments wouldn't be 100% more than they were the day they took office.
Correct.
You know what I mean? If they had that level of triangulation cunning in them, they would have done this on all kinds of things by now, and the dude would have like a 55% approval rating in an election year. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay. That's why I have a hard time believing they were like, sure, we'll tell Iran where they can attack it. No, I have a hard time believing that. Okay. But I just felt, let's be contrarians and at least entertain it. Fair?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So those are the two big things that have happened since, and now people are wondering, how will Israel respond in kind? Or will they let it sit? There are reports out from Politico and other in the Washington Post today that the Biden administration has told Israel that it will not participate in a joint action striking Iran. Vladimir Putin said over the weekend that that Russia would act to defend Iran if the U.S. indeed attacked it. Now, I have, given the fact that dude can't subdue Ukraine,
he's going to rebuild the Soviet Union, Steve.
Okay. Given the fact that dude can't beat the transsexuals in the European Union, okay, I have a hard time believing he's going to, exhaust whatever's left of his military prowess on Iran. Is that a fair contrarian take?
It is.
Nevertheless, though, I also don't want to make it a habit of unnecessarily instigating people who have nuclear weapons either. Fair?
Fair.
Fair. Okay. So, are we good to look at more specifics on this now? Is there anything you want to address here first?
No, let's go.
Okay. So, with all of this very long disclaimer, and I know it's way too long, but understand, guys, we're dealing with very complex situations involving generations and nations and potential weapons of mass destruction. This can't all just be summarized in, you know, a five-minute viral clip or somebody's pithy meme, right? We still probably haven't even touched the surface of giving you guys the information you would need to navigate this, but we're under time constraints. This is the best we can do. So Avi Meyer is a former editor at the Jerusalem Post. He put out a thread on X over the weekend responding to people that are critical of Israel right now. I want to go through each of what he says and try to figure out if you and I can find areas to be skeptical or contrarian that need to be further investigated before we just accept it at face value. Okay, number one, Israel started this with its airstrike in Damascus. He says false. Iran has been maintaining a constant assault on Israel for decades via its proxies in the region, chief among them Hezbollah, which is wholly funded, armed, and controlled by the Iranian regime. That assault has only intensified since October 7th. Hezbollah has fired rockets and missiles into northern Israel on a near daily basis for more than 6 months, causing the depopulation of much of northern Israel. Tens of thousands of Israelis have not seen their homes in half a year due to this Iranian-directed assault. Many of their homes no longer exist, having been destroyed by Hezbollah's rockets. The Houthis, another Iranian proxy group based in Yemen, have also fired numerous missiles at southern Israel. Finally, Hamas and Palestinian Islamic Jihad have been funded, armed, and trained by Iran for years, and the Iranian regime views the Palestinian terror groups as part of the offensive efforts against Israel. There has not been a single day in the past 6 months in which Iran, via its various proxies in the region, has not attacked Israel. The airstrike in Damascus targeted individuals directly responsible for Iran's ongoing assault on the Jewish state. So, I think the historicity that he lays out is without blemish. I think it's indisputable.
Agreed.
What could be disputed are the specifics. But I think the specifics are verifiable. Is it true that thousands of Israelis have been displaced for their homes? We could verify that, right?
Sure.
Is it true that there's not been a day that has gone by in the past 6 months in which Iran or one of its proxies, if you're counting the Houthis or Hezbollah, et cetera, have not in some way, shape, or form attacked Israel? That could be verified, right?
Right.
And even if it's not every 6 months, again, if you go back to the historicity that Avi lays out here, that is a fairly accurate view of the relationship between these two countries. Fair?
Right.
Okay. Then, you know, was it a consulate, as Iran claims? Was it a place where people that are directly involved in Iranian military or terrorist operations were being housed? We do know it's a long time common tactic of Islamic terrorists to place their high-ranking military or terrorist personnel in hospitals, school buildings, and other places as human shields.
Yes.
Fair? Okay. So our verdict on this would be, broadly, this is 100% accurate. The specifics can be challenged, but they should be contestable or confirmable. He's not stating something that could not be confirmed to be true or not.
Absolutely. And I would just, listen, going all the way back to Holocaust happens post World War II, the United Nations gets together, establishes the nation of Israel, a discussion that did not happen simply because of the fallout of World War II, but it had been going on for most of the 20th century in reaction to pogroms across the world. All of that happening, and that nation that you said being formed on January 1st, 1948, the reaction ever since that time to that has been, quote, Israel started it. So it's, and yes, you always have to find the facts, as Steve just said, then year after year, going here now into the Lord's year 2024, to shore that up. But it is a time-honored tactic. It doesn't matter what Israel says. It doesn't matter what they do. They always started it in their eyes.
All right, I think we can do number two quickly before the break here, because much of it is a quantification of what's in number one. The target of Israel's airstrike in Damascus was a diplomatic facility. He gives several names in terms that this was the local headquarters of the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. He mentions specific names of high-ranking brigadier generals and generals within the Iranian Republican Guard or Revolutionary Guard. Again, to me, this is all verifiable or not.
Yes.
That if, and I think if this is not true, we would be in favor of some form of sanction or punishment against Israel if our government had evidence that this was not true. This would be an unnecessary provocation then.
Possibly, but per what you just said on point one, on their history of constantly actually using facades.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Dangerous game they play over and over and over again, you know?
Fair. Then at the very least, if these entities were involved here, our own intelligence should be able to confirm such a thing, right?
At least enough of it, if not all of it, to confirm that the pattern of behavior over the years is being engaged with once again, yes.
And I think from this, the Biden regime's perspective, I mean, people were mocking him for saying to Iran, don't, after this bombing, okay? Guys, that's probably all he's capable of actually saying, if we're being honest, okay? But in some respects, wouldn't you think if the Biden administration could have found a way to triangulate here? I mean, they got rid of they put the Iran deal back in place. They funded much of this, okay? If there was a way they could triangulate here and say that this was not a strategic target that Israel hit, don't you think that the Biden regime would be screaming that from the hilltops here today?
I think so.
I think they would. So that again speaks to, at least on a general level, what Avi is claiming here about what was the building that was actually struck by the Israelis last week. Is it at least on a broad general level is accurate. And then the specifics he gives of which entities were there, which high-ranking military brass within the Iranian Revolutionary Guard were there. So would it be justifiable then to risk a broader provocation unless you were going to hit this kind of high caliber of target, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Those are things that could all be confirmed, though.
Yes.
Yeah. So the first two topics do not require any form of Zionist propaganda to accept. You don't have to be a hyper dispensationalist and that thinks Israel can do no wrong, right? You have to be some form of a globalist cuck.
This guy understands our founding fathers. He's just itemizing a long train of abuses here that, like, back then, it's true now. As you said, they can be verified.
Okay. There's three more of these. All right. We'll get to them here in a moment. Stay tuned. For all of you who have an IQ below 47, this is going to be breaking news. Incognito mode on your browser really isn't incognito mode, just so you know. But in case that is breaking news to you, that's why you want to check out our friends over at ExpressVPN. Turns out that even in incognito mode, your online activity still gets tracked. Data brokers still get to buy and sell your data. And one of these data points, your IP address. Data harvesters use your IP to uniquely identify you and your location. That's why they always seem to know what ads, whenever you're on one of these sites, what ads to give you that are based on the last few things that you searched or saw. That is another reason to get ExpressVPN, because every time you log on, your connection gets rerouted through an encrypted server and your IP address can therefore be masked. You'll get a random IP address shared by many other ExpressVPN customers, and that makes it harder for third parties to identify you or harvest your data. And best of all, ExpressVPN is easy to use no matter what device you're on, phone, laptop, smart TV. All you have to do is tap once for instant protection. So if you really want to go incognito and protect your privacy, secure yourself with the number one rated VPN, expressvpn.com/Steve. That's expressvpn.com/Steve. While you're there, you'll get 3 extra months for free if you sign up for a year at expressvpn.com/Steve. All right, let's get back to this thread with Avi Meir, former editor of the Jerusalem Post, responding to Israel's critics. And is there a way we're going through here? Can you be critical of Israel? I mean, during COVID, for example, this show was very critical of Israel.
Yes.
I thought Netanyahu instituted the worst lockdown of any free country in the world. And then his successor, Naftali Bennett, you know, you would think the first religiously observant Jew to ever be prime minister of Israel, you think he might be a little skittish about letting his people be products of scientific experimentation.
You'd think wrong.
You think he might be a little sensitive to that. But we thought wrong. He made the nation of Israel lab rats. Now, their suffering was to our benefit, sadly, because it also gave us some of the best data we had in the whole world of pointing out what Pfizer was doing to us, right? But nevertheless, he signed the nation of Israel up to be test subjects to Pfizer. And we were very critical of that at the time, right?
It's because most people, no matter where they live, Israel otherwise, actually are part of the nation of Pfizer and not the nation of wherever they think they live.
Fair. All right, so it's not as if, you know, and I don't even have a hyper-dispensational view on these things. I'm not even sure what my view is because I got too many friends on every side. So I know everybody's arguments for and against, you know. So to me, this is, I don't even have to get into theology for me.
So you're hated by all equally.
I am.
Well done.
I am. Everybody's like, you're not on our team. I'm probably not. No, I'm not sure what team I'm on. I'm on Team Jesus. I'm not sure what other teams that goes with. I don't know yet. I'm willing to explore that, okay? And I might have different viewpoints at different times, okay? But here's what I do know. Islam would gut Christian and Jew alike if it could and has. I don't need a theological position on this iteration of Israel to just understand the theology of Islam. And that it always inspires this level of violence. Its founder himself died fighting the last 20 years of his life, fighting in constant warfare. And it's a warrior religion. I mean, they were kidnapping our own soldiers out on the high seas. And when Thomas Jefferson, as the ambassador, asked him why they were doing that, he said, well, Muhammad told us to. Just told them that. Just tell him Muhammad told us we had to do this to infidels like you. And he's like, oh, okay. I mean, there's a branch of this religion always spawns because it's documented institutionally within the writings, particularly the hadiths of this very religion. So I don't need to think that this is prophetically significant. I don't need to think that this seed of Abraham is something I need to go on blessing forever. I don't have to know the Israeli national anthem and not my own. I don't have to fly an Israeli flag at my house. Okay. And I'm not saying not to do those things either. I don't know. Okay. But I'm just saying I don't have to have a position in favor of those things to come to the conclusion. Oh, Islam says we're the Jews and Christians are the people of the book and then go out and gut us if it wants. I'm against that. I don't have to even get to your theological nuance. I just have to have read a history book a few times.
Correct.
Yeah. All right. Let's get to number three. The third lie that Avi says he's encountering here. That Israel carried out the Damascus airstrike in order to provoke a wider war. He says false. For months, Israel has limited its military response to the ongoing assault by Iranian proxy groups for tit-for-tat airstrikes and artillery fire directly targeting the sources of the attacks. The reality, however, is that large swaths of northern Israel have been uninhabitable due to the ongoing Hezbollah attacks, which are being directed by the group's patron, Iran. The only way to force Hezbollah to stop its assault on northern Israel and restore calm is to target the Iranian military officials behind the attacks. That is what the Damascus airstrike was intended to do, to end the impunity enjoyed by Iranian military officials as they oversee ongoing attacks targeting the people of Israel. Now, Todd, this one I think is the most open of the five, in my view, to strategic pushback and contrarian view, because it is largely a strategic interpretation. Okay? It's largely saying this is what we think was the most prudent course of action in light of this information. And I do think people of conscience can have disagreements about what the course of action is given the same piece of information. You're Catholic. I'm not. All right. We're looking at the same piece of information and we have some ecclesiastical or strategic differences of what those pieces of information now require us to do in response to those viewpoints. Okay. So I do think, but much of what I have seen has not been what is a more prudent way to push back on Iran and the Islamists within your own borders. It's been, you shouldn't push back on Iran and the Islamists within your own borders. Well, that's not an option. Okay. October 7th is another reminder. We went through decades of Israel giving away how much land for peace. None of it would satisfy. They did all that. So if you're arguing that any pushback is bad, well, then I think you're either ignorant of the historicity here or you've got another agenda in mind. Beyond that, I do think reasonable people who do understand the historicity here could have differing views then on what's the best strategic approach to the premise that Avi lays out here.
Well, not only do I not think they want a wider war, they know the other side does, and this is a preemptive measure to make sure that those with idea who are inspired by, hey, Hamas, I like what you did with that raping and pillaging over there on October 7th. We all know that Israel, from the very beginning, as I already laid out, has been surrounded by this. Israel has the kind of actionable intelligence to know that is almost certainly what's going on here. So this is the most farcical of all, in my estimation. It actually reminds me of a review I saw you offered of a movie you went to see this weekend that's supposedly the prequel of The Omen, and it's basically the Catholic Church.
The Omen, not The Omen. The Omen.
The Omen. Yes. The Catholic Church is getting so bored that it, like, gives birth to the Antichrist.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So you're just saying
this is the Catholic version of the Temple Fund. There's a thing within evangelical circles, people that believe that Jesus won't come back until the temple's rebuilt, that they donate to the Temple Fund to encourage the Jews to try to take the temple back, to bring Jesus back. The Omen says that the Catholic Church did a version of this, that it essentially bred the Antichrist into the earth to provoke Jesus to return.
Yeah. Israel wanting wider wars. Folks, if you know, again, your history, not your theological history, your history up till 1948, the other side has constantly been begging for war. This does not fit.
Correct.
You cannot pound this yet again. I know you keep trying. This square peg will not fit into this round hole.
And the Israelis, under both Bushes, under Clinton, under Obama, gave away scores of land for peace.
Yes.
They did sign up for a two-state solution. That's why there's a state of Hamas within Israel where they hold elections. They voted Hamas in. They've done all these things.
Yes.
Those things are without dispute. Okay. Anybody claim, maybe you could say they could do more and didn't go far enough. That's a point you could argue. But if your premise is that they have been trying to escalate this from the beginning, Benjamin Netanyahu's been saber rattling about Iran for the 30 years he's been on the world stage. And this is the most aggressive tactic he has taken, which was to respond to them attacking him. Okay. By the way, a statement from a senior Israeli, pardon me, I dropped my phone. Statement just a few minutes ago from a senior Israeli Air Force official credited the success in defeating Iran's attack with the information from, quote, recent normalization of relations with certain Middle Eastern countries, end quote, believed to be in that coalition, Iraq, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, among others. So this is actually a good talking point to get to number four, that any Israeli response will cause the situation to escalate further. He says false. The unprecedented Iranian assault on Israel, which involved hundreds of missiles and drones, was the escalation. It has been roundly condemned around the world. Israel will respond to this unparalleled attack of aggression, as any sovereign country would, not least in order to deter the Iranian regime from carrying out further attacks against Israeli territory and send the message that Israel will not tolerate massive attacks on its sovereign territory by a foreign state. I will say, for me, given the situation in the world right now, this is the one I'm the most leery of. I would normally be, you have now the justification to essentially crush the Ayatollahs, commence pleasantries. Okay, we have two mitigating factors here though that at least I think should cause us to reconsider the math. Doesn't mean the math still isn't the same as it was, but I do think this is a moment where we need to listen to the contrarians to some degree. Number one, the regime we have in the White House right now. Right, the report that came out that we cited a little while ago, that we knew what Iran was going to do and actually coached them on how to do it, or what was an acceptable, attack on Israel to us. I don't trust our own. We have an evil presidency, and I just don't trust them to manage our own interests or not allow this to escalate into a broader conflict. I just don't. I don't. And I don't think I need to go into that anymore. Then it's just like self-evident.
No, you need to put an exclamation point. I believe October 7th and what's happening now is happening exactly because of what you just said.
They went back to giving Iran the money and everything else. I mean, under Trump, Iran was isolated and emasculated. That is not a debatable point. It's not debatable that Trump's pro-life position is disappointing. It's just a matter of how disappointing you think it is. It's also not disappointing that they isolated and emasculated Iran, and the Ayatollahs are re-empowered under Biden. So that's a new thing. The second thing is, we have an actual coalition of Arab countries. If you know the long-standing parochial rivalry here, Iran's not an Arab country. Okay, so we have a coalition of influential and powerful Arab countries. These aren't just minor players here. Okay, we have a coalition of powerful Arab countries coming to Israel's aid, not just putting out press releases or doing press, press avails for Nobel Peace Prizes. They're sharing intel. They're striking down Iranian military assets here. And so I do think if this is a real coalition, I think you have to consider their own political cover in your moral calculation. These guys stuck their neck out for you. You can't leave them hanging. You know what I'm trying to say? I mean, I think you have to at least consult them to some degree to maintain the integrity of that relationship, rather than we just wake up tomorrow and I don't think the Israelis would do this either, but just as an example, there's a mushroom cloud in Tehran. You know, I think that they need to be, to borrow a biblical phrase, kind of grafted into this if they're being sincere.
Yeah.
Fair?
And to the degree that it was happening or not, Iran wants to know. You know, Iran launched those things and there was like 3 hours to get there.
Yeah.
They know how Israel's going to respond to that. What they don't know is this weird new coalition.
Now they do.
And now they do.
And so I think you should use that asset if you have it. You know, and I would at least want to know, how far are they willing to let me go to have my back? Because they stuck their neck out for you. Don't stab them in the back. All right,
Did you ever think you'd live in a life where the King of Jordan was more resolute in defense of Israel than the President of the United States?
I know. We have said, did you ever think you'd see, how many times have we said that the last three or 4 years?
Too damn many. Yeah.
All right, one more. But before we get there, don't forget about our friends over at Hillsdale College. You want to get the latest issue of In Primis. It's their free digest of liberty. Goes to more than 6.5 million homes and businesses all over the country. And you're going to learn about the American Medical Association, for example. They're now saying that medicine is imbued with white supremacy. And so we need to lower the standards for DEI, ESG, and all this other demonic crap. And Primus gives you smart constitutional commentary from the likes of Christopher Rufo, Victor Davis Hanson, Heather McDonald, and Hillsdale's president, Larry Arn. If you don't already get it, you can receive a free subscription at daceforhillsdale.com, F-O-R. Daceforhillsdale.com is where you want to go. No cost, no obligation. Sign up today at daceforhillsdale.com. All right, here's the final one. The relatively limited damage from the Iranian attack means it's no big deal, and Israel should let it go. He says the Iranian assault was absolutely unprecedented in its scope and severity. The only reason it didn't cause widespread damage and massive casualties is because Israel and its allies have for years invested billions of dollars in developing sophisticated air defense systems against this threat. Most of the missiles and drones were intercepted before they reached our borders because Israel and its allies were prepared for them. But make no mistake, this Iranian attack was meant to rain death and destruction on the people of Israel. And if Israel doesn't respond, it will open the door to further and more severe attacks by Iran. No other country would put up with this. Neither should Israel. Ironically, Iran would have destroyed the Dome of the Rock Saturday night if not for these defense systems that Avi is talking about. That is one of the top three most sacred sites of Islam. All right, that's the Temple Mount where the Dome of the Rock is, and the dome underneath that says God has no son that the Islamists put in there after the Crusades or during the Crusades. They would have destroyed this if not for the air defenses that Avi is talking about. I do think, again, trying to give contrarians some credit without you're an anti-Semite, I do think we need to explore how much of this was Iran thinking it needed to do something to show face, even though it might, after what happened to its Revolutionary Guard with that in Damascus, and that this was more for show, anticipating that Israel and its allies would be able to quickly dispense of this missile attack. You see what I'm trying to say?
Oh, totally.
How much of this was for show on the Iranian end, and they really don't want to provoke a wider war at this point in time? I think that that should be debated and explored before we just sign off on what Israel, whatever Israel wants to do and respond.
Don't underestimate their need to propagandize their own street.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that. And even on the, it is a big deal, but in terms of quote unquote do nothing, well, again, Israel is fighting on multiple fronts right now. I'm not going to ultimately, and has been doing it for 48 years, I'm not going to judge what it necessarily does or doesn't. It may be a less aggressive response than you might be prone to thinking because of the number of arrows. And again, another one is what Steve said about who our president of the United States is right now.
Yeah. So in conclusion, are we in agreement then that there's really not a justifiable basis to question the premise of this from the Israeli perspective, but there's plenty of room to be contrarian about specific strategies of pursuit in light of those premises.
And that's about almost any topic we take up. Yes,
right.
Correct.
How much of the anti-Israel commentary do you think is doing that we're seeing online from the right now? Not much.
No.
So it's probably the other stuff then.
Exactly.
Romans 8:28.